Now, In Depth with Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, October 11th, 2013, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The 4 o'clock hour on Friday is the Federal News Countdown. Producers Sean McCauley and Beth Reardon, internet editors today Michael O'Connell and Jack Moore, and my guests on the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week are Karen Evans. It is great to see you as always. This is 2 days in a row. This is
I'm pretty excited. 2 days that I've spent with Francis.
You got to you were very kind to come to the Affirm luncheon yesterday in light of the fact that folks who were scheduled to be on that panel were government people, and of course since they're shut down, they were not able to appear. And I said then, and I meant it, and I'll say it on the radio, we had you, and we had Richard Spires, and we had Charlie Croom, and we had Earl Crane. And I came out, Robert Shea is here from Grant Thornton, and I came out, Robert, as we got ready to start, and I said, I feel like the manager at the All-Star game who just comes out and walks around and says hi to everybody and then sits down in the dugout and watches the stars really just do what they're doing. It's terrific to have you here. Thank you very much for coming.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And it was a good panel yesterday. It was a great discussion.
Thank you. And thank you for being on the program today. And, Robert, it's great to see you as always. And this is like an OMB reunion today.
It is. It's great to be with you, Francis. It's even better that I'm with the lovely and talented Karen Evans.
We're excited to. This is you might have to really control us because we're pretty excited about being on this together.
Now, my colleague Beth Reardon suggested earlier that I might just introduce you and then just leave. And you guys could do the rest of the show.
That wouldn't be any fun. Then we wouldn't get to spend time with you.
Well, but she then went a little bit over the top and said it would wind up probably being a better show than if I stayed in the studio.
She's wrong.
And so
She's wrong.
She
might be shut down before too long if that continues. We, of course, need to start with the Federal News Countdown this week, and we'll start where we always do.
Number three.
Karen, your third most important federal news story of the week is Jack Moore's story on federalnewsradio.com, headline, Contractors Fate Uncertain, Even as DOD Civilians Return from Furloughs. And in most of the places that have covered the shutdown so far, the contractors have really kind of been the forgotten people. People ask me outside of the Beltway and so on all the time about what's happening with the employees, but nobody really remembers the contractors till somebody like you or I or whoever who plays in this space on an ongoing basis brings them up.
Well, and I brought this story up because the shutdown has a huge ripple effect, and it's going to hit all different parts of the economy as it goes forward. But on this particular one, they're furloughed. They're not laid off, so that's actually good news. But the federal government employees are going to get their back pay. I mean, that's been clear.
Well, it's likely.
Oh, it's likely. Okay, it's passed through the House. I mean, the Senate hasn't brought it up yet, but, you know, right now, I didn't even think that initially would get through the House, and it has. So everybody's sitting there saying, you know, that's really great because they didn't bring this on themselves. Well, neither did these contractors. So if they don't get paid because of the way their contracts are structured and they're furloughed, this is money that they may never get back because there's not going to be anything because it's all under contracts. So this is going to have a big effect on those families that have contractors. And if contractors have to sit there and furlough them because these are tight times with the federal budget, contracting employees are never going to make this money back.
And it's eventually going to cost the government money, I would think, because a company's not just going to eat this. This is going to play into how they figure overhead and P&L for the foreseeable future. Isn't that fair to say, Robert?
Absolutely. We were at a time when most of our new year projects were about to kick off.
Mm-hmm.
Those are delayed. Those projects are still going to have to be done. More importantly, though, you know, in addition to the folks who are not working because the government is shut down, and for us it's about 20%, we're not doing the hiring we would have done in this time of the year because of the shutdown. There's too much uncertainty for us to go and make that investment.
Some companies are saying that they're keeping their folks on and they're paying them, but others, as Jack details in the story, the BAE Systems, Lockheed Martin, United Technologies is going to keep folks on, but everybody's doing it differently. And I don't see any way that changes until we have some idea of where we're going money-wise. Do you care?
That's probably true. And the other thing I think that really plays into this, and Robert, you could probably shed a little more light on this, is it's going to determine on the type of contract that each of them have for the particular initiatives. So, for example, if you're under firm fixed price, right, and those types of things like that, there are certain things that you've already built into it. So you may not necessarily be getting the cash flow, but you know that that's the fixed price of the contract. So it's just really where the flow is and how you can make things up. But if you're like on cost plus, or, you know, need I say that there are some contracts that are still time and materials that are out there, then they're not going to recoup those costs on time and materials, because that's either you're there or you're not. So it'll really depend on the type of contracts.
Karen Evans' third most important federal news story of the week is Jack Moore's story on federalnewsradio.com, headline, Contractors Fate Uncertain, Even as DOD Civilians Return from Furloughs. Robert, your third most important story of the week is headline, CFOs at Tipping Point Due to Fewer Resources and More Requirements. It's Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com. And look at this. This is a study that Grant Thornton was involved with. Wait a minute. You work for Grant Thornton, right?
Well, thank you for pointing that out,
Francis. That's an interesting coincidence, isn't it, Karen?
I'd be remiss for not mentioning the report we released this week, and I'd also be surprised if you didn't give me a hard time for it. we released this week the 18th annual survey of chief financial officers that we've done with the Association of Government Accountants. And over the years, we've heard from the CFOs that they've got a tough job working in the federal government and financial management, very tough, lots of challenges. But we heard something this year that we hadn't heard, which is enough's enough, something's got to give. Declining resources, budget uncertainty, a demoralized workforce, and yet requirements heaped over and over again on this community, something's got to give.
What I took out of this report and Jason's coverage of it was that there is maybe a little bit of a silver lining here, and that is that the idea that I have thought was silly for years of let's try to do more with less seem to be hearing now from the CFO's office that's not realistic and that's not going to happen, and we have to think differently moving forward.
That's right. I mean, if you look at cost, the campaign to cut waste or the cost cutting that's done, this year it's been done across the board, not strategically. They haven't been able to find waste where it exists and hold harmless those programs that don't have a lot of waste. Across the board, because the worst way to do it, CFOs just don't have the tools they need to manage through this.
But this goes back to something that was very personal to you when you were at OMB, and that you and I have talked about it a number of times. You got to know what works before you know what you can cut.
That's right. And the data analytics, or the lack thereof, was a big issue that came out. We need to enhance the quality of our staff and the extent to which they can really assess the information they have, use it to make decisions.
What Robert's talking about, though, Karen, is something that sounds, at least on the surface, like requires investment. Not necessarily a bad thing, but not something that there's a whole lot of going on right now. Well, especially not now.
But there are a couple things that are out there that if the CFOs are aware of it, because underneath their staff, most of them have the budget officers. And so there is a big initiative that OMB runs under Max, that Andy Schombach, you know, a little shout out to Andy here, that he does, that the budget officers really, they recognized this several years ago and organized themselves and put together means to bring data so that they could analyze it and answer some of the questions that needed to be answered about the budget. And so what I got from this is now being elevated up, and that that same type of capability that they developed for themselves, they need to have across the board so that they can look at all the program areas and make those give that type of information to the CFO.
But you really need a skill. You need talent in your workforce to be able to take the data, convert it into a form that facilitates decision-making. And with the current state of the federal workforce, that's going to be very hard to get.
But yeah. If I read between the lines of what Karen is saying, Robert, it sounds like she's saying if anybody should know where to find some money for that, it should be the CFOs with the authority and with the people they have working for them.
That's right. That's right. They know where the money is.
The third most important federal news story of the week, according to Robert Shea on this week's Federal News Countdown, is Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com, CFOs at Tipping Point Due to Fewer Resources and More Requirements. And all the stories on this week's Countdown posted later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We continue on the Federal News Countdown with the second most important stories of the week from Robert Shea and Karen Evans next on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
A Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Here's Bill Lay, Deputy CIO for Information Assurance and CISO, State Department. Continuous monitoring, tools and techniques for trustworthy government IT panel. Sponsored by Tripwire.
We're all struggling with how do we get our principals' information on a tablet securely so they can travel with it. We do not have the luxury of the static architecture that we've had for the last several years. Not that it was ever easy to secure, but it's going to become more challenging, obviously.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Agencies are under immense pressure to implement continuous monitoring to improve their cybersecurity performance. Tripwire understands cyber threats and vulnerabilities, federal initiatives, and compliance standards. That's why agencies using Tripwire's foundational security controls typically achieve over 80% risk reduction in under 6 quarters. Leading federal agencies and nearly half of the Fortune 500 depend on Tripwire. Find out why at tripwire.com.
You don't want to miss the Caps in action. Single game tickets are going fast. The Caps have a full month of October, including exciting games against the Rangers, Blue Jackets, and more. Go to WashingtonCaps.com or call 800-745-3000 to buy your tickets today. Do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Here's Doug Bourgeois, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, from the panel discussion, the Federal IT Challenge.
Looking at the capabilities and the value proposition of software-defined, it enables a next-generation approach to innovation that we should all be really excited about. It allows organizations to leverage best practice now, like fail fast and fail forward.
To hear the show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
What two dimensions are necessary for effective collaboration? How can agency leaders and OMB foster cross-agency collaboration as a way of doing business? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Dr. Jane Fountain, author of the IBM Center Report, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaboration, A Guide for Federal Managers, next week on the Business of Government Hour. Tune in every Monday at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Robert Shea and by Karen Evans. And we are up to the second most important story of the week, selected by Karen Evans, is from FCW.com. It's Frank Kunkel's story, headline: Judge Rules for Amazon Web Services over IBM in CIA Cloud Case. And there's a notion, Karen, that protests like this are rampant, they're all over the place, that they never end. Is that fair when we look at something like this that really is a terrifically major contract and a really important get for either one of these companies that winds up with it?
Well, and I'm highlighting this for a couple reasons. And one is about the protests. But you knew that this was going to be protested, because whoever gets the first major rollout in cloud services in the federal government, I mean major outside of like what DISA is doing, which is private internally, this is a big market. Everybody's trying to push toward this. And so for it to be protested, you knew that was going to happen. This is the CIA, so this is the Intel community type of thing, and they're doing a lot of things internally, so this is a big deal. What is kind of embedded in this story, which just really is interesting, is the one paragraph that talks about the rebid. So because they reopened it up, you know that both of these guys rebid it and cut their prices, which means that this particular thing is saying, okay, Amazon, you can go back now and do your original one, which was one set of numbers. And now CIA knows that they actually could have gotten a better deal with the rebid. So they're now in this position about, oh, okay, well, do I go for it? And they have to recalculate, it, for example, the return on investment. Does it make sense for me to go for it at this higher price, which I thought was a good deal anyway because I was going to award it to them? Or do I look at the savings in between and the time I lost and what's the trade-off from that in order for me to go for it? So now CIA has to do a little bit more analysis of this because they know that they could have gotten a better price.
Frank reports here that that original contract could stand the way that it is, but it might include some modifications the GAO suggested. So we might wind up with some kind of a hybrid between the two places that you're talking about.
And that's what they would have to do at this point, because if it were me, if it was my contract and I'm sitting there looking at it and I've really only lost 6 months and that would have been a startup anyway and I could get this lower price and based on the term of the contract, this is going to set the precedent for everything that's within my enterprise, especially for the intel area. This is going to be the whole intel area. Whatever CIA does, everybody knows that that's how it's going to go, right? And so that's why this is a big contract. And this is really important as you're going forward, because whoever gets this, this is going to set the precedent, because everybody's going to look to CIA and say, how did you get that done? And they're going to copy that procurement, and they're going to want to get it done.
There's an old saying in negotiating, Robert, that you never want to be the first person to name a price, but that's essentially the position that these people found themselves in, the way Karen lays it out.
Well, I think it's going to be a wake-up call, not only for cloud providers, but all contractors. Money's tight. Competition's going to grow fiercer and fiercer, and those who can provide innovative, high-quality service at a lower price are going to win over, and the governments and the taxpayers are going to win over.
So I'm wondering, if I'm sitting here watching this play out, Karen, and I'm at another agency or whatever, I'm wondering if I don't set some kind of a mechanism in place that if I don't like the prices when they come in, I can ask for a rebid.
You could.
And I wonder why we won't see more, or maybe we will start to see more of that given the environment that Robert's talking about.
We see it a lot. Yeah. Some agencies say, thanks for your contract, looks really good. Can you give us a better offer?
How often would you say that happens?
I'd be hard-pressed to say. Probably 10%. We could see it a lot more.
That's what I'm thinking. If we're only seeing that 10 or 15% of the time now, I mean, would 80% look like?
Well, because what they'll do is they'll write back, and we did some of this stuff previously, is that you write back and say, you know, this is a really, really good technical proposal, but say the cost is too high. So you tell the contracting officer this is really great, but really ask them if this really is their best and final cost for this. And when an agency says and sends it out to two or three and says, is this really your best and final, then that signals to the contractor, ooh, we're in the running, but our prices are a little too high. We better go back and relook at it. Mm-hmm. Or if it really is their best and final and say, yeah, it's my best and final, then, you know, then the government has to go back and say, did I really estimate this right? Am I really right in what I think my cost proposal would be for this? But in this particular case, these guys now have the information from IBM and Amazon and whoever else bid on this when this went and protested, and can see where the baseline should be. So now they can give this baseline information to all the other subcomponents in the Intel world and say, this is where you should start, and you probably could get a lower price on this.
The perennial sharpening one's pencils, right? The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Karen Evans from FCW. Judges rule for Amazon Web Services over IBM and CIA cloud case. This is where, Robert, at number two, that you chose to inject a little humor into the whole shutdown thing. You chose, as your second most important story of the week, from Marketplace, the story's headlined, Hog Farmers Hope Shutdown Ends Before Pigs Fly, and you even have the picture of the pigs here.
That's right. No offense,
come in
Francis.
The story. Why would I be? No, wait a minute. What are you saying? Why should I be offended by a pig photo, Robert? What do you mean by that? Why'd you choose this before we get really ugly here?
This story just shows, if you're curious about the impact of a government shutdown on average Americans' lives, this really highlights just how deep the federal government is working in all kinds of areas. And this says that basically hog farmers, when they go to sell their pigs, they need to depend on government data to set their price. And without that, they've got to rely on private sources, other random sources, to figure out what they're going to sell their pigs for. They don't know whether they're getting paid too much, too little, and they're really, you know, selling in the dark.
This is an example of exactly the kind of data that I think the average citizen has absolutely no idea impacts the way they live their lives. And there's probably a place, this isn't it, there's probably a place for a spirited debate about whether this is the kind of thing the government should or shouldn't be providing. But the fact of the matter is that what this person is experiencing, this Brian Duncan fellow that you're talking about, that's quoted in this story, this impacts this guy's living. This is hurting this guy's pocketbook, and he's not associated anything with the government or dealing with the government or selling to the government or anything. This is just a byproduct of the shutdown, Karen.
Well, and this is all the statistical data that the statistical agencies do. I actually know about this in agriculture because when they would get ready to release this data, they would go into lockdown. And these doors come down in the agriculture department when I was there, and the statisticians are inside there cranking out all the numbers in order to be able to release it because it affects the market. And so, you know, there's the statistical agencies, this is all through the federal government that sets a lot of the commodities and the pricing and the things like that, and that data is not available now.
It'll also, of course, impact people who are buying pork chops.
Which happens to be my favorite, the other white meat, just so that you know.
That's right.
I'll write that down.
I'm a fan myself. Bone-in pork chops. Thick slice.
The culinary choices of Robert Shea and Karen Evans, important facts you get from the Federal News Countdown. Now, my favorite line in this story is one that quotes a Lisa Goldenberg, who is president of the Delaware Steel Company, which is says here is located in Pennsylvania. So I don't not relevant to the story, no, but the, just rather
NPR,
ironic in my view, given
NPR
where we are with all of this.
NPR was doing a series of stories on how the shutdown is impacting all kinds of facets of American life.
Mm-hmm.
Steel was next.
Yes, and you can find that story and all the stories on this week's Countdown linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Robert Shea and Karen Evans, are what we have left on this week's Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose. Be right back.
Now your National Cybersecurity Awareness Month update brought to you by BAE Systems. The Army Research Laboratory is teaming up with university and industry researchers to form a collaborative research alliance. The military-funded program will emphasize three areas of research: risk, detection, and agility. You can find out more about the partnership at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. This National Cybersecurity Awareness Month update brought to you by BAE Systems on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Here's Brigadier General Joseph Brendler, Acting Deputy CIO, G6 U.S. Army, on the Federal Executive Forum on Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Schneider Electric.
We've recently celebrated our success as the Army being the initial service partnering with DISA to implement Defense Enterprise Email. This was an initial enterprise service essentially moved to the cloud in consolidated data centers run by our government partner. It's just the initial one.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Struggling to meet your data center consolidation and sustainability goals? Look to Schneider Electric. From assessments, planning, and infrastructure improvements to funding vehicles to overcome capital shortfalls, Schneider Electric offers the industry's leading expertise that you need to create more efficient, available data centers. With their future-minded solutions, you'll realize lower lifecycle costs, enhanced physical security, and a smaller building footprint. That's Schneider-Electric.us.
At BAE Systems, protecting troops is always a top priority. That's why we create combat vehicles that not only help them win the fight, but bring them back home. Our vehicles are designed from the ground up with the latest integrated solutions, all with troops in mind. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
I'm Jeff Thomas, president of Shine Systems and Technologies. As a certified Hub Zone small business, Shine is rapidly becoming the recognized leader of specialized products and services in intelligence analytics, biometrics, and technology integration for all levels of the government and private sector. In the past year alone, we've been able to grow from 16 employees to over 100 with the help of Insperity. Insperity gives us the resources of a large corporation in areas like human resources, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. Our partnership with Insperity enables us to shine.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Now for your Federal News Radio DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 37 minutes past the hour. Next week's GEOINT symposium is canceled because of the government shutdown. The Geospatial Intelligence Foundation says it will try to reschedule the event for next April. The Pay Our Military Act, passed before the shutdown, prevents defense employees from attending special events. Tune in for your DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 37 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two people every week in the 4 o'clock hour on Friday who are experts in the world of the federal government. And this week's experts on the countdown, Karen Evans and Robert Shea. And Robert, we are up to
number one.
Your most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Social Security Judge Accused of Disability Scheme. This is a story about a hearing that you attended this week, and you told me after this hearing that you'd never seen anything like this in the 314 years you've been on Capitol Hill.
It's the Mona Lisa of oversight hearings.
Tell me, set the scene for us here and help us understand what this is all about.
So you had an opening panel of officials from the West Virginia Social Security Disability Office.
And it's the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee,
that's
right?
That's right. Senator Tom Coburn presiding. You also had a couple of whistleblowers from a law firm who testified that there was collusion between a law firm and a specific lawyer, doctors who gave false diagnoses, and an administrative law judge in the Social Security Office who heard all of these appeals and ruled favorably on them. This was followed by another panel of doctors who were, one of whom pleaded the fifth, another who was quite defiant and tried to argue why diagnosis after diagnosis was precisely the same. He really didn't have a very good defense, but that was soon followed by a fellow from West Virginia named Khan with one of the shiniest black suits I've ever seen and a fancy lawyer on his arm who pleaded the fifth. But it did not detract at all from the drama in the hearing room. It was literally beautifully choreographed, highlighted unbelievable fraud, and showed how we need to pay attention to how we're measuring the performance of these programs, because as Social Security was driving faster appeals, it was turning a blind eye to data like this, which showed you massive fraud going on by some charlatans in West Virginia, and some of my best friends are from West Virginia.
One of them sitting right here on the Federal News Countdown.
He keeps saying West Virginia, West Virginia.
Well, you know, now that he lives in the Commonwealth, he wants to make sure that he's not associated with what I've heard to referred as the colony that left that Commonwealth in 1863.
Yeah, I'm telling you. And that still is debated a lot in our state, let me tell you.
I believe. Now, this hearing, Senator Carper talked about this at the hearing, saying, as the story says, that one of the judges based in Huntington, which is, to be fair, Karen, down in the southern part of the state, not anywhere near where you are.
That's true. This is true.
That Senator Carper pointing out the fact that this guy was also present, but left before anybody called him to testify.
That's right. So he skipped out on a subpoena. So there are U.S. Marshals probably looking for him as we speak.
There's a whole lot here that sounds like if you're the person in question that what you've done was a really bad idea. But one of the things that it strikes me as I look at this that's a really bad idea is to go before a member of Congress, a member of the United States Senate, who also happens to be a medical doctor, and talk about medical decisions that you've made. That strikes me as really not the best judgment that anybody's ever exercised.
I don't recall seeing this level of stupidity on a witness panel at a hearing, and that is saying a lot. this fella tried to argue why he made so many diagnoses that were identical. Some of them made in the office of the lawyer representing the client. This thing stinks to high heaven. And it really shows how some aggressive oversight by the Congress can lead to some reforms. I hope what we're going to see is real attention to the way we're measuring Social Security, disability, and other benefit programs so that this kind of fraud isn't allowed to run rampant.
I think there might be two schools of thought attached to what Robert would like to see happen, Karen. One school of thought is that, yes, spotlight will be called to this matter generally because of this really egregious example that's been pointed out. And that's what we've seen a little bit with the Edward Snowden case, where people say, wait a minute, maybe we need to look at how we're doing these screenings. And the same thing with the Navy Yard. Maybe we need to look at how we're screening people to get into our facilities because of this one awful example. The other part of it, though, is that maybe there's a risk that people will say, well, boy, this example's really awful and terrible, but they can't all be that bad. I mean, there can't be that many of these things, and the focus will shift off of that. Do you think one of those scenarios is more likely than the other?
And I agree with everything that you're saying, but I'm actually going to take it in a whole different spin because, as you know, like I always try to have a little theme going through here. And in this particular case, I think that if you actually would go back and look now, it does take collusion, obviously, for everybody to say, okay, right? But to the underlying question about how could you make the same diagnosis over and over again, so I'm going to bring it back to information technology on some of this stuff. What happens in some of these systems is that they preload them with conditions, with codes that match up to Social Security codes and things, and say, you know, like this claim will go through if you use this. And so what happens a lot of times is when people are processing these insurance claims, they pick the same claim that has the same information, and therefore it looks like the same diagnosis. Now, he actually has to say it's this diagnosis, right, so that the assistant knows to do it, and that's why he had all the whistleblowers. But this is another thing where you're trying to make things easy. So IT companies have loaded it up so that claims will get processed faster. But because of that, it helped facilitate a lot of this fraud, which I think that part is the part that really needs to be looked at, is the underlying systems, because a lot of these things have to be sent in electronically. And by doing that, you wanted to make sure that it goes through the edit checks, which then lends itself to, ooh, this is a good way where we can then, if we all agree that this is what it is, and then send them all in that way.
The dark underbelly of data analytics.
Yes, it is. That is exactly what it does.
How much is this problem going to be exacerbated, though, by the avalanche of data that we're getting? And more, if agencies are struggling, as Social Security appears to be struggling here, to manage this data, it doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon, because the volume is increasing faster, it seems, than the analytic capability of the government or the vendors that sell the government.
We do need an investment in the analytic capability in federal employees. And, you know, the Data Act currently under consideration in Congress would set up an infrastructure for reporting and regularly reviewing this data so you can see these trends and focus some investigative resources on them.
Robert Shea's most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Social Security Judge Accused of Disability Scheme, and you can read it and all of our countdown stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Number one on Karen Evans's list is next to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown, next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Be right back. Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon Touch Ultrabook, inspired by Intel, the world's lightest 14-inch notebook with Intel Core i7 processor and robust security, assembled in America. Learn more at WTOP.com/ultrabook.
Can't make it to every Wizards game this season? Wizards partial plans are on sale now. Purchase a 5, 13, or 21-game plan starting at just $17 per game. Select your own games. Call 202-661-5050 or visit WashingtonWizards.com today.
True innovation means anticipating challenges before they occur. Lockheed Martin was early to recognize the changing nature of naval warfare. new types of threats in coastal waters called for a new kind of combat ship. We responded with deep thinking for shallow waters, designing the littoral combat ship with speed, agility, and the most networked sensors of any surface combatant. And to make sure commanders stay one step ahead of evolving missions, the LCS is built on a flexible C-frame with interchangeable mission modules. It offers the operational flexibility to execute focused missions such as anti-submarine, mine, and surface warfare, providing access and dominance in the coastal battle space like never before. The LCS is one more example of our ongoing commitment to those who are meeting the security challenges of today and tomorrow. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
I'm a recruiter for a major defense contractor. We're always looking for top talent out of grad schools because only the most skilled and highly trained individuals meet our standards. But one place makes my job easier. It doesn't just produce qualified candidates. It turns out IT idols, cybersecurity ninjas, people who make our firm smarter and faster than our competitors. It's called Capital College, but I call it my secret weapon.
Capital College offers graduate degrees in information assurance, engineering, business administration, and other high-demand fields. Courses are conducted live online, yet provide hands-on practical learning, as well as the effortless interaction of a traditional classroom. And Capital works with industry to ensure that its curricula meet the needs of the real world.
To me, Capital's master's degree programs are where stars are born and why their graduates are perfect for us.
For a virtual info session on graduate programs at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
Here are some tips for a fun-filled weekend with Marvin Bond, editor of Recreation News. Any beachy Virginia activities left?
The Chincoteague Oyster Festival is October 12th from noon to 4 p.m. There are all-you-can-eat oysters and any way you can fix them. Chincoteague is a great place to spend a weekend. It's called one of the best beach islands in the country. You can find out details on page 47 of the October Recreation News. The Eastern Shore Birding and Wildlife Festival is October 11th to 13th, and that's based in Cape Charles, Virginia. There are millions of migrating birds that stop at the Eastern Shore Wildlife Refuge and Kittatinny State Park at this time of year. There are plenty of family activities and tours to places that are not normally open to the public. Find out more on page 47 of our calendar events in the October Recreation News, or of course at recreationnews.com.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Beth Reardon.
Recent and pending legislation, federal budget cuts, strategic sourcing, human capital, and the relationship between government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 32nd Annual Government Contract Management Symposium, November 18th and 19th in Washington, D.C. Hear from the Honorable Charles F. Bolden, Jr., NASA Administrator, as well as Kenneth Asbury, President and Chief Executive Officer of CACI, in addition to three leading expert panels. Learn more about this training event at ncmahq.org/WFED.
Federal News Radio wants your thoughts on the government shutdown. Call our comment line today at 202-274-4806, 202-274-4806.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It's the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week. Selected this week by Robert Shea and Karen Evans. And Karen, your most important federal news story of the week is from the Wall Street Journal, and the headline is Software and Design Defects Cripple Healthcare Website. I've probably gotten more questions about this, aside from the shutdown, more questions about the rollout of healthcare.gov than any other government topic in the years that I've been covering this, from people outside the Washington, D.C. area. And I think because we're so consumed with what's going on by the shutdown and so on, we're not hearing the same thing that people are hearing outside the D.C. area about how difficult this has been for people to navigate and figure out how to use and get signed up for the exchanges through healthcare.gov.
Well, and the reason why I picked this particular story, and this has nothing to do with the healthcare, Affordable Health Care Act, or anything else like that. The reason why I picked this was, as this story was rolling out in little bits and pieces, as you could see it, I kept saying to myself, this is a typical IT project in the federal government. And this is one of these ones of why they always want to have IT reform, because the federal government spends over $80 billion in information technology. And what a lot of this stuff in here, only because I lived this, you know, is that I could see different pieces in it, and I'm like, we still haven't fixed the problems, the underlying problems in the management of information technology across the federal agencies. And this just happens to highlight it all in one big fell swoop.
Is this something that, given what Karen's talking about, we should have seen coming? We should have expected that there were going to be difficulties like this and maybe been better prepared for?
I think you should have expected the government to have a hard time launching a major IT project, because it's rare to find a government-managed IT project that launches successfully. And so with something as big and important as this, it would seem to me we would have wanted to load test. We would have wanted to pilot the wazoo out of this thing. It's a real shame. I also wonder, you know, I buy most of my products now online on Amazon, eBay, any number of other systems in place to verify the identity of people who are applying, and they're quite trusted. I'm not sure why this was such a challenge. You know, you talk about outsourcing. We could have outsourced this. Well, we did. We had a private provider who did the development of this. Was it the project management that suffered? Was it the contractor's problem? It's not clear, but it is a crying shame that this amount of money was wasted or invested in something that didn't work when it most should have.
Well, is it fair to call it wasted yet? I mean,
No, you're right. But a lot of money was spent to get the thing working when it most needed to work, and that didn't happen.
It certainly wasn't deliverable on day one the way it was expected to. There were no requirements that I'm aware of met on day one of this, Karen.
Well, right, because this is how a government project rolls out. So if you take away what it was supporting, and you just look at what it was done. They got the deadline 3 years ago. So what the federal government IT staff did here in this particular case was, okay, that's my end date. And so this is the Big Bang Theory. I'm rolling everything out all at once. But, you know, Clinger Cohen, Robert, when you were on the Hill, said take a modular approach. Everything that this administration has said is break it down into small deliverable modules, right?
Agile development.
They're all talking about agile development. What is even more interesting on this, and I could see why the IT shop would argue a little bit about the Amazon thing, because the way that Amazon and those guys remember you is they put a cookie on your machine, right? And so we have a bunch of different things dealing with federal policies about cookies and all this other stuff like that. But, I mean, there are enough initiatives around that, for example, Department of Labor did GovBenefits, which you could fill out a form and you could figure out what you were initially eligible for from all the federal government programs across the board that dealt with what are the federal government processes and policies. And then you could then say, oh, I'm going to go and apply for these programs over here. So it's not like you couldn't necessarily do this. It's not like with a cloud initiative, that's another one, cloud first. So, you know, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, all those guys, when they put this stuff up, you know, during their peak holidays, they don't say, well, we're limiting the number of people who can buy from us today or get on the services. So people know how to do it. I think this is, Robert, you said some of the same stuff. It's project management, right? What is one of the big things that the federal government needs to improve upon? Investment in the workforce and project management, so that you can think through the project to break it out and put it into modules and meet that deadline.
Some of the stuff in this Wall Street Journal story really surprised me. But I guess the thing that jumped out at me the most was, if I've done one interview about cloud and scalability over the last 5 years, I've done 1,000 of them. And the fact that so few users could seemingly log on to the system or access the system at the same time, you know, you talked about Amazon, Robert, and eBay and all of that. You know, there's no limit as to how many people can get on, because they work in the cloud. And if 80 million people want to look at baseball cards on eBay at the same time, they can.
Yeah.
And so I'm unclear as to why these scalability problems happen,
Karen,
in a cloud environment.
Karen and I were trying to help out during Katrina, and we were going to have the president announce a helpline for folks to call if they needed help. And everyone was panicked about the ability of this telephone line to carry all the traffic. So we had all kinds of backup, and we had more than enough supply for the demand for that phone. phone line. This is what you assume happened. I'm not sure exactly why people couldn't log on. The thing that frustrates me the most is that this is another example of how we've let the American people down. There's low trust in government. This was an opportunity to meet or exceed expectations, and we, you know, failed miserably.
Some of this is surprising, Karen, for a project that had a 3-year advance date too. And I wonder if some of this criticism is fair, actually. Engineers at web hosting company Media Temple Incorporated found a glut of stray software code that served no purpose they could identify, but that doesn't necessarily mean there was no purpose to it. That just means these folks that the person that wrote the story went to could figure out what it was all about. That doesn't mean it's useless, and that's kind of the implication, it seems to me, in this story.
Well, right. And so if you look at some of the stuff of what they were trying to do, and I really think that the way that this was designed is you go and you register, and then you give certain amount of information, and then the idea was that it was going to validate in real time, right, so that you would then know what options were available to you. So Robert is intimately familiar with this, as I am. The back-end systems of these agencies that would have to validate, which would be like Social Security Administration, IRS, CMS, you know, all of those things, looking at that and bringing it into a data store so that you could do it to do it real time. That's part of the stuff that maybe that extraneous code doesn't look like usefulness to someone else, but it is probably useful because of, and the systems are, you know, archaic systems that are on the back end because they haven't been upgraded because of the data that's in there. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other ways that data can then be there so that you can validate against it, you know, that you could give them an answer in 24 hours. I mean, there's a bunch of different alternatives. And when I looked at this, I'm sure that what's happening is a lot of people are pointing fingers back and forth at each other. It's the federal government's fault. It's the contractor's fault. No, it's IRS's fault. It's SSA's fault or whatever. But what it really comes down to is the government has to know what they want and when they want to accomplish it. And if they talk more about capabilities, and what happens a lot in the IT areas is that because we know technology and technical requirements, will drop down and say, technically, this is how something is that we want it to work, when in fact, we can't possibly know all the best solutions that are out there, so we should talk about capability. And if you talk about capability, then I can talk to Robert about, is this the kind of stuff that you want? And if he says yes, then I can go back and talk to my contractor who can then get with the right partners to develop the capability. And I really think that that's what broke down here. I bet you when this is really looked at, you're going to find out that every time the government writes a technical spec, they shift the risk, and the risk goes back onto the government, and the contractor is alleviated of the responsibility. Now, if it's right or wrong, you know, that's a different thing, but there's a contract that's in place that then exonerates the contractor.
This sounds like it sounds like what she's saying, Robert, is that this is a case where the government, because it has to follow the FAR and all of the associated things that go along with it, all the policies and so on, it can't just say, here's how it should work. Show us something that will work like this, because it has to go through, it has to follow all the regulations and all of that.
I'm not sure I buy that. The government can't say, this is what I want, come tell me how you're going to provide it. But you want a provider who understands that it's not just federal acquisition regulation. It's also information sharing agreements that have to be entered into between all of these agencies. The technology itself has to ensure the privacy of the data is collected. You've got unbelievable number of stakeholders who care about how the system is rolled out, not least of which is the states. So it is a highly complicated endeavor, and if it had been launched without issue, then this would have been one of the great management successes that we can imagine. But what I think Karen is saying is we should have started from the point of what is it we want to achieve. Let's break the project down into very small pieces and very simple so that we can ensure success one step at a time.
And that's exactly to the point where Robert is talking about. If I was talking with Robert about certain things and said, here are the certain functionalities, is this what you want? Then the whole idea about information sharing, privacy act, data retention, records management, that you're responsible for all those are all policy issues. Those are not technology issues. And so all those policy issues would have to, especially when you get into sharing with state and local governments and going back and forth and where does the data reside, and if a FOIA request comes, is it a federal FOIA request or is it a state request? And those are all policy things. What's happening here is, and this happens a lot, right, is because I bet you some of the policy questions could not be answered, it manifests itself in a failed IT project.
We just have a minute or so left. How do you rescue something like this, Karen?
Well, I'm sure that they are rescuing it right now, and you fix the quick technical problems so that it works, so that it buys you time to get the back-end policy issues answered and get the solution in place.
But there may come a point where you need to pull the plug so you don't lose more investment.
That's true. That's true.
Pull the plug and start over, or absolutely. Pull the plug over and triage?
Pull the plug and start over.
Amazing. The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Karen Evans, is from the Wall Street Journal. The headline is Software and Design Defects Cripple Healthcare Website. And you can read it and all of the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And we'll archive the conversation so you can listen back to that anytime you want. What a terrific countdown today, even though it's a little dreary outside.
It's great. The sun is shining in here.
Yes, it is.
It's great to have both of you here. Robert Shea of Grant Thornton. Karen Evans, U.S. Cyber Challenge. Wonderful to see you as always, my friends. Thanks for doing it.
Thanks for having us.
Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.